This is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu.
Sonesta Suites in Charleston, an extended stay hotel located near the airport, downtown, and the state capitol. More at sonesta.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.
Welcome to the Legislature Today. I'm Curtis Tate. The House of Delegates worked through multiple amendments and nearly 3 hours of debate on a bill that would provide exemptions to the state's current childhood vaccine laws. Brianna Heaney was there and brings us this story.
The first proposed primary amendment profoundly changed the bill. It was named after the health committee that it was created in. The first primary amendment, when it was introduced, did away with the religious and philosophical exemptions. The only exemption possible was a medical one, which is similar to current law. The second primary amendment would have changed the bill nearly back to the Senate's version of the bill, which had no reporting requirements, required private schools to accept religious exemptions, and allowed for civil lawsuits against schools that could result in monetary relief. But first, the House made changes to the First Amendment, the one that came from the House Health Committee. After nearly half a dozen proposed amendments and hours of debate, one key secondary amendment stuck. Delegate David Green, a Republican from McDowell County, successfully put forth an amendment that would have put religious exemptions back in. However, it upheld current provisions in the primary amendment that would allow private schools to set their own vaccine requirements, something different from the original vaccine bill that came out of the Senate.
This country was founded upon religious freedoms and religious liberty. As a young person, teenager going to school, I pondered the thought often why that our state didn't allow for religious exemptions. And today we get to change that.
Delegate Bob Fehrenbacher, a Republican from Wood County, pointed to the fact that West Virginia has one of the lowest vaccination rates for children under three. However, for school-aged children and adults, the state has one of the highest vaccination rates, a shift he attributes to public school vaccine requirements. He said he worries that if the state loosens vaccine requirements for school children, then overall vaccination rates in the state would plummet.
Now, that to me would suggest that number may go down and put more children into the school systems without vaccination. That's just one on measles, mumps, and rubella.
Delegate Fluharty, a Democrat from Ohio County, said the amendment would be broad, only requiring a note stating the exemption.
I could write on a piece of toilet paper, hey, this goes beyond Johnny's religious beliefs or my religious beliefs, and therefore we want an exemption, hand it over to the principal, and that's that.
The amendment also took away reporting requirements for children who received their religious exemption. In an extremely slim margin, the bill passed 52-44. After many more failed amendments, the legislature voted on two primary amendments. Anders' amendment was untouched. However, the House Health Committee amendment was changed at its core to allow for religious and philosophical changes. If one passed, it would cancel out the other. By the slimmest margins of the day, the Health Committee primary amendment won out. Worrell explains where the bill stands now.
The only one that was adopted was Delegate Green's from the 36th that added a religious exemption into the bill, with also keeping private and parochial schools to do with have set their own policy.
Senator Laura Chapman said she was overall happy with where the bill currently stands. Now the bill heads back to the Senate, where the changes made will be considered. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney at the Capitol.
Over the past year, camping bans have started popping up at both the state and local level. As Chris Schultz reports, a camping ban bill making its way through the legislature has some Morgantown residents feeling frustrated.
In September, the Morgantown City Council approved a camping ban ordinance that makes it a criminal offense to camp or store personal belongings on public or private property without authorization. But by November, voters successfully petitioned to postpone the ban and put it to a vote on the local ballots April 29th. Now the results of that vote could be superseded by a statewide camping ban making its way through the state legislature. Delegate Gino Chiarelli, a Republican from Monongalia County, is the lead sponsor of House Bill 2382. Chiarelli told West Virginia Public Broadcasting last week that he introduced the bill because the citizens of his district, who mostly live in the county, do not have a say in Morgantown's ordinance. The bill escalates from a warning for the first violation up to a $500 fine for a third violation and even jail time.
Like the local camping bans that have been passed in Morgantown, Wheeling, and other communities over the past year, the statewide camping ban does require that alternate shelter be offered before any criminal penalties can be imposed. But unlike Morgantown, most communities in West Virginia do not have established shelters.
House Bill 2382 passed the House of Delegates March 11th. Thursday night, it was taken up by the Senate Judiciary Committee, where Senator Eric Tarr, a Republican from Putnam County, reintroduced language that would allow law enforcement to offer transportation to violators of the ban.
I think instead of being punished, I think they should be given the alternative to not be punished of accepting transportation to an area outside of West Virginia that has excess capacity for providing services for those experiencing homelessness, need for addiction services, or need for mental health services, giving priority to a location near their home.
According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which conducts a count of people experiencing homelessness annually in January, about 1,800 people were homeless in West Virginia in 2024. Mark Phillips, president and CEO of Catholic Charities West Virginia, told the committee that the majority of the people his organization serves are West Virginians.
It changes from place to place. So places that are a little bit closer to borders, obviously you see more individuals. Most recent statistic I can give you, our emergency winter shelter in Morgantown, 90% of those individuals were from West Virginia.
Tarr's amendment was adopted and the bill was advanced to the full Senate. Brian Butcher represents Morgantown's 7th Ward on the City Council and is the co-lead of West Virginia Housing Justice. The group is organizing events leading up to the April election to get out the vote against the local camping ordinance. Butcher says he wants more frank discussion amongst lawmakers about how to address the material issues of homelessness.
It would be really nice if we could just get back to, you know, working together on solutions that we've identified that really work, and instead of just focusing on this one thing and trying to fight against it or fight about it.
Last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in City of Grants Pass versus Johnson that camping bans do not constitute cruel and unusual punishment. Butcher says there are simpler, more humane actions the government... Butcher says that there are simpler, more humane actions that governments at every level could be taking to address homelessness immediately. They range from creating a housing voucher program, like one recently launched in Pittsburgh, to simply providing better access to basic services.
That's in addition to all the, like, kind of low-hanging fruit that we could be doing, like locker programs, bathrooms for people outside, to kind of alleviate the immediate things that people are seeing out on the street.
House Bill 2382 is progressing through the Senate, and a camping ban appears likely to become state law before the end of the legislative session April 12th. That would nullify Morgantown's vote April 29th. Leslie Nash is an attorney at Mountain State Justice. She says that prospect is incredibly frustrating, but doesn't make the efforts against the ban futile.
I think us coming out and showing how vehemently we oppose this ordinance is really important to us as a community. I think it's important to folks who are unhoused to see that their neighbors don't agree with this. Like, we do not think this is right, and we're gonna do what we can until we are bypassed by our elected representatives who maybe don't care what their constituents think.
The statewide camping ban bill is scheduled to be read a first time in the Senate Monday, March 24th, and could be on the governor's desk next week. For the legislature today, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
Some members of the West Virginia House of Delegates want to tighten identification laws for verifying voter eligibility. Jack Walker brings us this report.
West Virginia voters are generally already required to show some form of identification at the polls to prove their voting eligibility. House Bill 3016 would require that to be a photo ID, namely a driver's license, passport, or a resident identification card. The bill would also require state IDs to denote if a resident is not a U.S. citizen with the word non-citizen. Proponents of the bill told the House Judiciary Committee Friday morning it could reduce voter fraud and that obtaining qualifying IDs in the state is already an accessible process. That included Delegate Rick Hillenbrand, a Republican from Hampshire County.
Looking at the bill and all the testimony and all this, there's still several other options for identification.
But opponents of the bill, like Delegate Evan Hansen, a Democrat from Monongalia County, worry verifying a resident's citizen status between the Secretary of State's office and Department of Motor Vehicles could be a technically faulty process. Hansen also expressed concern that the bill would be overburdensome on residents who already have difficulty obtaining or renewing forms of identification.
Well, it's going to require photo IDs, so I have concerns about elderly people who no longer drive and don't have a valid passport anymore. They're going to have to travel from like a senior living facility to the county clerk's office to get a new voter ID card with photo, and that's not really practical for a lot of our elderly voters.
Hansen said he worries the bill is part of a broader effort to reduce voting access for some lawmakers.
The Republican supermajority is pushing a number of bills that make it harder for people to register to vote, harder for people to actually vote, and harder for legally cast votes to be counted. I don't know why they're doing this. I think one of the most important things about America is preserving people's access to vote.
Members of the committee agreed to table the bill for further review and possible amendment. For the Legislature Today, I'm Jack Walker at the State Capitol.
For our weekly feature with our student reporters, Malia Saar and Emma Browning, they take a closer look at bills making their way through the legislature.
Hi, I'm Emma Browning.
And I'm Malia Saar.
In last week's program, we reviewed some legislation aiming for more restrictions in West Virginia.
This week, we want to examine two proposed bills that have the opposite goal, to lift restrictions.
Lifting restrictions can be done in more than one way.
We expected healthcare to be a large topic this year, and we were correct. Early in the session, a bill regarding new and expanded medical centers were introduced.
Currently, when a healthcare center wants to make additions or create a new facility, they must gain approval from the West Virginia Healthcare Authority. This is what's called a certificate of need, and it's currently mandated in the state of West Virginia.
The authority's goals are to control healthcare costs, improve the quality and efficiency of the healthcare system, encourage collaboration, and develop a system of healthcare delivery which makes healthcare services available to all residents of the state.
The concerns are that a program appearing necessary could start and then fail, especially in rural areas, since the overall project wasn't evaluated by the government. A lack of regulation could also impact the quality of care provided.
Although a bill to lift certificate of need restrictions was introduced in the House of Legislature, House Bill 2007 has been voted on in the House Health and Human Resource Committee and defeated. Currently, Senate Bill 453 is in committee. On the patient side of healthcare, the Hospital Price Transparency Act was introduced in the House.
If passed into law, it will require healthcare facilities to publish the cost of their medical services and equipment.
This bill mandates that hospitals create a free online list of costs that a patient may incur. The site requires no personal or financial information to access. Facilities are required to update the information yearly.
The Department of Health Facilities, which oversees all state-owned health organizations, will monitor the completion of this list and could charge the hospital per day for violation of the law.
The goal is to help patients better understand and compare medical costs before receiving treatment.
We will continue to follow where these bills go in the legislature. Thanks for viewing today.
See you next time for the Legislature Today.
For our reporter roundtable this week, our Eastern Panhandle reporter Jack Walker joins health reporter Emily Rice and me in our studio to discuss legislation we've been following this week.
All right, Curtis, Emily, thank you both very much for joining me here today. I know it's been a busy week at the West Virginia Legislature, and we've been keeping a close eye on some of the discussions happening. And I'm excited to hear from both of you about what you've been keeping an eye on. So, Curtis, maybe to begin with you, you are our energy and environment reporter. Tell us a little bit about the energy policy discussions you've been following this week.
Well, they're more like energy controversies.
Okay, controversies.
Mm-hmm.
Fill us in.
Well, the first thing to discuss is House Bill 2014, which was introduced just this week at the request of Governor Patrick Morrisey. It seeks to expand the number of microgrids in the state that can support data centers. But the controversy on that isn't really so much about the microgrids or the data centers. It's about some additional unrelated provisions that apply to the state's existing power plant fleet, the coal-fired power plant fleet that operated by Mon Power and Appalachian Power. And it requires a couple of things of them. They have to now have a 45-day supply of coal on hand instead of a 30-day supply. That went into law a few years ago. It requires them to be ready to operate at a 69% capacity factor, which means, you know, what percentage of the time is the plant running? The average is really, really closer to 40%. I mean, there's no coal burning plant in the country that operates at 69%. Right. And it also would make it evidently would make it harder for these companies to switch from coal to natural gas. Mon Power actually plans to do that in the next several years for its two coal plants in the state. So both companies have told me that they have very serious concerns about this bill. I've reached out to the governor's office to see if they'll address that, and have not heard anything so far. There's a second thing, if I may.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I guess it was last week, the Senate Energy Industry and Mining Committee passed Senate Bill 505, which also applies to Appalachian Power and Mon Power in a way that it would. It requires the Public Service Commission to lean on these companies to emphasize fossil fuel generation over renewables. Those companies have some concerns with it. Mon Power actually opposes SB 505. But here's the really interesting thing about that, though. Mm-hmm. The Senate Energy Chairman is Chris Rose of Monongalia County. He is a Mon Power employee. And he was asked, by Mon Power to keep his role as a legislator separate from his job. And so we caught up with him a couple of days ago, and he said that he would seek to recuse himself from further involvement in that bill. He was a co-sponsor, and it moved out of his committee. Ultimately, that's up to Senate President Randy Smith, and we don't really know how he's going to rule. He could actually advise or ask Rose to vote on that bill. So we just don't know yet how that's going to turn out.
Got it. And Curtis, I'm wondering, could you like situate this in some of the, energy has been a major point of focus for both the governor and many of our lawmakers. Could you situate this in terms of what direction you see this moving? You mentioned, you know, this is in some ways devaluing renewable forms of energy. How does this fit into like a broader context of West Virginia energy policy?
I think the way to describe it is this. The cost of electricity is a major issue for residents, and they've been telling the Public Service Commission by the hundreds in the comments, we don't need any more rate increases. Well, Appalachian Power is seeking a rate increase, and there was a small protest at the Capitol yesterday about that. The legislature so far has pushed a lot of policy that would boost coal. It has not, though, pursued anything that would reduce the cost of electricity. So we haven't heard the last word on this by any means.
I trust that you'll be continuing to follow that in the weeks to come.
That's exactly right. Well, I know that you've been following something that happened in the House of Delegates today. Why don't you tell us more?
Yeah, well, I just got back from the House floor session. It's hours long at this point. To my knowledge, it's still running at the time that we're recording this. And one bill that did get passed so far was House Bill 3297. So this is a bill that would establish a independent center to study Western civilization, Western tradition, and civics at West Virginia University. It's not a bill that assigns any funding to it yet. Lawmakers described it as a framework of sorts that would be built upon in the future. But essentially, it's a push to expand course offerings surrounded a, quote, Western curriculum.
Unwoke?
Perhaps. I'd say that's probably the cultural context beneath the push for this. Certain lawmakers were in favor of it. Delegate Pat McGeehan, who is a sponsor on the bill, said he thinks it would attract new professors. It could attract new students even and encourage, cross-disciplinary study. There were critics of the bill, primarily on the Democratic side. So Delegate John Williams, he expressed concern that, first of all, it is, launching a center without explicit permission from West Virginia University. So the idea of, basically bypassing their leadership structure to mandate a center be open, that is a, sort of phrasing that Delegate McGeehan disputed. But that was, a overarching concern from some of the comments that we heard. And in addition to that, I think there were some concerns that some of these courses are already offered, couched within, different departments of the university. Delegate Williams also read through a list of, different course offerings that kind of seem to correspond with the missions of this proposed center. And going back to my notes here, also just the budget constraints at WVU. So, approving a bill that doesn't have an explicit funding source attached to it. Again, it's something that some of the Republican sponsors of the bill said would be built upon in the future. But I think there is concern about, mandating a center be opened without any, clear direction of where the funding will come from. I also will add that it did stipulate that the director of the center would be appointed by the governor. That was another point of concern. So, the governor having a say over some level of, the academic independence, perhaps, of the university and its operations. And the bill passed. I mean, it did receive support from a majority of the House. It will need to be, considered by the Senate and get their stamp of approval before appearing before the governor's desk to become law. But that is, a bit of an oversight on it. It's something else that we'll be following, and I'm sure will be, a large part of education policy discussions.
Lawmakers, ask about, the context of the past year with WVU budget cuts.
Right,
Was that discussed at all?
Yeah, so, that's excellent context to bring up. So, WVU experienced a $45 million budget shortfall in 2023. It closed, dozens of academic majors, slashed hundreds of faculty positions. It was a huge point of contention for the state. It made national headlines. That is something Delegate Williams brought up. And I think that was, kind of the basis of some of these financial concerns associated with this project. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I know, Emily, you also have been following quite a bit of legislation, and I don't want to take away from that. So, we'll continue to follow this as it travels through the Senate, assuming that it does. And in the meantime, Emily, our health reporter here at WVPB, walk us through what you've been following at this week of the West Virginia legislature.
Absolutely. So forgive me. I do recognize I have a very serious topic to cover.
Right.
It has been a very long week. I would say, overall, our lawmakers that are sitting on our health committees are grappling with the bigger question of, what public health is. What is its place in our government? How much oversight should it have? So, with our Republican supermajority, they want small government. They want less, regulations. So there's all these bills moving to do that, but then at the same time, we're moving in different directions. But I think the main one, and the main one that is keeping the House in session, as far as we know, as we speak right now, is Senate Bill 460. On Tuesday, it was in the House's Health and Human Resources Committee. They discussed it at length. House Bill 460 is providing religious and philosophical exemptions for vaccinations. That's how it originated.
Right.
And it's actually really interesting. It was originally a governor's bill as well, as the one you were speaking about. In its original form, and that's what lawmakers are discussing on the floor, a part of it. There were some amendments. I think there were upwards of 7 to 8.
A lot of amendments
kind of tough, to
yes.
trying to bring it back down to the governor's bill, then trying to bring it back up. A lot of this has been discussed in committee, so it's really interesting to kind of hear these lawmakers maybe bring up the same points that they did in committee and got answers from experts in committee and are ready to bring that to the floor. But then other lawmakers are just not amenable at all. So it's really interesting what's going on the floor. I quite frankly, Speaker Hanshaw has had to call for, not a point of order necessarily, but just decorum a little
right.
bit. And of course, it's a
they're not being nice.
It's a tough topic. It's about, people care about their kids. Of course they do. And our own health. Health is just such a vital topic and so important. So I think that's kind of what I'm getting at is our lawmakers that deal with health are kind of coming to a little bit of a reckoning with how far can we legislate? How much do we want to, we want to protect the people of West Virginia, but what does that mean? And you know, we want to legislate against regulation, but we still want to keep things safe.
Right.
And not to bring up a completely separate topic, but our colleague Chris Schultz is dealing with a lot of these same parental concerns when it comes to their children's safety. So in the House right now, they were discussing an amendment to put the full religious exemptions back in. So that was the last.
Right, and that's something the governor has, as you mentioned,
yes,
sought.
Yes. So I think that one failed right as I was coming up here.
Okay.
So they are still discussing Senate Bill 460, and that would add in. Well, we are one of, I think five, six states that doesn't have religious or philosophical exemptions.
Just a few, yes, yeah.
And one of the delegates on the floor did mention that you know, we're an outlier, and a lot of my sources, as I've been covering this for the past few years, have mentioned that when physicians and people from the health department come in and testify that we are, you know, the golden standard of vaccination, they argue that, well, no, we're an outlier. So it's so interesting, and, you know, it's the democratic process. I'll get nerdy about it to listen to people.
But so far, no measles outbreak.
Let's knock on wood.
Not so far. There was a possible exposure in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Of some people in West Virginia. I forget the exact. I think it's 65 days. We got to watch out for that, and then we'll be in the clear. But
absolutely,
got to wait for a press release on that.
Well, thank you, Emily. Yeah, I know this is obviously a very broad discussion with a lot of different viewpoints, and it would take a lot much more time to get into the nitty-gritty there. But I wanted to thank you both for your time today. This has been a very educational discussion that we've had, and we'll be continuing to follow these bills all season long at with the West Virginia legislature. So I am sure that we will have more discussions to come in the weeks ahead.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
That's it for tonight. Thank you for joining us. Catch the legislature today, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. And remember, West Virginia Public Broadcasting covers the session daily in our radio news program, West Virginia Morning, and on our news site, wvpublic.org. I'm Curtis Tate. Good evening, and see you here again next week.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu.
Sonesta Suites in Charleston, an extended stay hotel located near the airport, downtown, and the state capitol. More at sonesta.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.